But I'll leave you now in the capable hands of Georgia Mann, who's here to guide you through the rest of your evening here on BBC Radio 3. Georgia.
Thanks, Ian, and well done on that marathon. It is 9 o'clock now, time for Drama on 3. Here's playwright Martin Wade to introduce his play about Richard Strauss, Hide the Moon.
When I contemplated writing a play about Richard Strauss, I was all too aware that he possessed at the least some very human frailties, and that these were especially evident during the Nazi regime. How I wondered to present the man and let him speak for himself. An answer came when I learned of a visit that was made to Strauss's home at Garmisch, Bavaria, in May 1945, soon after Germany's surrender to the Allies. Strauss's visitor had reasons for trying to conceal his identity, and the encounter between him and Strauss raised issues that particularly interested me. The visitor requires Strauss to justify himself. How effectively Strauss responds is for you to decide. In Hide the Moon, Richard and Paulina Strauss are played by David Calder and Sean Phillips.
Tell you how delighted I am.
Can you not?
I was wondering if I'd bump into you sooner or later.
Yes, Kurt. It's a small world.
Absolutely. Mind if I join you?
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, it's been a while.
I suppose it has.
What are you doing here?
Not a lot. What are you meant to be doing?
Following your line. I'm a staff correspondent, working on vanquished Germany.
And where are you off to?
No idea. I need to justify my existence somehow. Look busy, drive around a bit, speak to the natives.
If you've nowhere particular in mind, you could drive to Garmisch.
Garmisch?
A pleasant spot, I'm told.
Though that's not why you want to lift there.
It's about an hour away, that's all.
Oh, yes.
I'd be extraordinarily grateful. I had a lift arranged, but it fell through. You owe me, you know.
Owe you? What's at Garmisch, then? Aside from the scenery.
Richard Strauss.
Strauss.
Care to see him?
Not as much, I imagine, as you do. Is he expecting a visit?
He isn't, but I'm confident he'll be home. Someone I met was there a few days ago, a music buff. He received a lengthy discourse on the use of leitmotifs in Rosenkavalier.
Now, that's not what you're after.
Damn right.
Let me guess, the disreputable old man is to be brought to account.
Hope so.
You'll be grilling him about his involvement with the Nazis, exposing him as an unscrupulous, self-serving shit.
A Jew-hater, too. So...
Yes?
Garmisch? Your father?
My father. He never got on with Strauss.
So I understand. How is he?
Well, you mean you haven't been in touch with him?
No.
You used to find him so helpful for your work. And strange to relate, he always had a soft spot for you, despite your journalistic single-mindedness.
You think so?
You know so. Actually, he might even have a soft spot for me if he could bring himself to look for it. Last I heard, since you asked here, he was well.
Ah. Good.
And since you didn't ask, I could be worse.
Oh.
I won't say that I much enjoy being an American. Haven't thoroughly assimilated. Americans, I find, are gruesomely lacking in the cultural department. But then again, Germans make claims to be cultured. Or used to. Look where it's got them. Us. Thank you for that letter, by the way.
And thank you for yours.
All of its 20 pages.
Somewhere in there.
Yes?
You made a solemn promise.
You're right, I did.
Well?
I've kept it.
And?
For heaven's sake, Kurt. I'm still living and breathing. But thank you anyway for all your help. Not least for getting me into uniform.
Ah, yes. How not to look like a queer.
Well, your advice made all the difference, I'm sure, and I'm much obliged. So, the plan with Mr. Strauss is a lengthy, hard-hitting article incorporating the interview?
Yes.
You've done your research, I take it?
Certainly. See?
I'm impressed.
Do you know much about him?
Oh, a little.
A year and place of his birth? 1864, Munich. Father?
He had one, I expect.
Horn player in the Munich Court Orchestra. Illegitimate.
Well, the son?
The father. 1894, Strauss the younger marries a singer. Name?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Miss Pauline de Arne. 1903, Strauss receives a doctorate from the University of Heidelberg. 1904...
It's a life thus far that's tediously blameless. What, you wonder, can be said of my life since I last corresponded? You must be anxious, surely, to learn the broad sweep of it, if not every detail.
The broad sweep will do.
I was in psychological warfare. Leaflets, not bombs. Clever compromise. I salved my conscience by pretending to do my bid for America, and satisfied what was left of my pacifist principles by failing to kill anyone. But this little venture didn't last. My methods of persuasion, I was informed, were far, far too literary to have any significant effect.
Really?
Yes. Father was a little surprised as well. So they moved me to the Stars and Stripes. For a time, I was doing articles, reviews, had vague hopes of elevating the coarse American mind with columns on ballet and philosophy.
But that, you decided, was a hopeless task. And then?
And then, a couple of weeks ago, just before the official surrender, it was decided that I ought to go to Germany and provide readers with impressions of a nation in defeat. Made my way to Munich. Oh, and while I was there, I interviewed Emil Jannings.
Jannings? Ah, friend of the family.
Yes, that's how I got to see him. He was utterly charming. He hadn't wanted, he said, to be in any of those unsavory Nazi films, but had no choice.
You wrote up the interview?
I did. And as soon as the paper printed my pleasant little piece, I was advised by various people that I'd been duped.
Thoroughly. The bastard's fascist sympathies are well documented.
Apparently so. But I've promised myself I won't be tricked again.
Won't you?
Oh, no, I didn't mean... Forgive me. Richard Strauss is your victim, he's not mine. I'll sit quietly throughout the entire interview. I won't even take notes. I haven't any intention of muscling in, I promise. But in return for playing chauffeur...
Yes?
I'm allowed to write a couple of paragraphs of the Stars and Stripes. Agreed?
Must be it. It's big.
And it's vulgar. What did that sign say?
Off limits. He doesn't know you, does he?
Absolutely not.
Good.
I have met him, admittedly.
You've met him?
Only on the one occasion.
When?
Years ago. When I had a lot more hair and a lot less flab. The Munich Festival. Just a handshake and a quick chat. Mother thought we ought to try and heal the rancor between Father and Strauss. But Mr. Strauss, as I recall, wasn't much interested in the notion.
Well, perhaps you shouldn't come in.
What?
Well, just to be on the safe side.
Oh, no.
Stay in the jeep.
No. No. Kurt, he won't recognize me.
You're sure?
I'm sure. Honest.
You'll have to change your name.
Oh, you're right, I will. I'll follow convention and be Smith or Brown. Come on.
Salome, yes. Electra, yes. Rosencover, yes. Ariadne, Daphne, but they can't be left out. Well, nor can the Silent Woman, despite its unfortunate history. Arabella, yes.
Richard?
The Woman Without a Shadow, yes. And what about Intermezzo?
Richard, are you busy?
Hmm?
Are you writing?
No, oh, I'm thinking.
But are you busy?
Well, I'm trying to draw up a list for my Museum of Opera.
Oh, that.
Wagner, everything from Rienzi onwards, excluding Parsifal. Beethoven, Mozart, Verdi, Gluck, Berlioz, Bizet. but only Carmen. Humperdinck, but only Hansel and Gretel. Well, what do you think so far?
What do I think?
And then we come to my own works.
What I think isn't important.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. It's too soon to be making plans. That's what you think.
Yes.
You're wrong, my dear. This is the time. Delay and the chance will be lost. Hmm? And then, as I say, my own works, which is where some slight awkwardness may arise. I can't include them all. Can I? I was wondering... Intermezzo?
No.
Well, I feel it ought to be on the list. The subject matter, surely.
Yes?
Well, it was groundbreaking.
Ah!
And the music.
Can't bear the music.
I know you can't, my dear.
Intermezzo is appalling. Intermezzo was the grossest of errors.
What about Guntram? It's a beautiful opera, is it not?
Guntram has unhappy memories.
Well, it does, and happy ones as well.
If you're not busy, you have two more visitors.
Americans?
Yes, they say they are, but they both speak fluent German.
Ooh, linguists say, oh, bravo.
Do you want to see them?
I certainly do. At all costs, one must maintain good relations. Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Are you from the camp here?
No, we've driven some distance, especially to see you.
Well, I'm honoured. Now, I brought pen and paper. If you wish, you can choose a Strauss composition, and I'll write down a few bars. But please note, neither De Fledermaus nor the Blue Danube Waltz is a work I claim as my own.
Actually, I'm not an autograph hunter. I'm attached to the military as a reporter.
Oh, likewise. Oh, you want to interview me?
Well, if you don't mind.
Richard.
I've put them in the study.
Yes, but they didn't wipe their feet. Look at the marks they've left. Look.
I'm very sorry.
They can't stay.
Because they didn't wipe their feet.
If they do stay, it mustn't be for long.
Well, an hour is what I suggested.
No, out of the question. I don't think what you'll say in an hour.
I'd have hoped that I know enough about music, my dear, to fill up the time.
That's not what I meant. If they ask about other things...
Well, politics, you mean? Well, I'm ignorant about politics. I'm happy to admit as much and stay silent.
But will you?
I promise. Paulina, they seem perfectly pleasant and a favourable report from each of them. Dr. Strauss, relieved that the war is over at last, despite his advanced age, still dedicated to his craft, regeneration, the great plan, and so on and so forth. Well, it can only be a benefit, surely. One of them said his copy is often... what was the word? Syndicated. Yes, you see.
I'll talk to them.
Instead of me?
No. Oh. Come. Gentlemen, please be seated.
Thank you.
Dr. Strauss's health, I should advise you, isn't what it should be. Oh. And, as always, he's very busy.
Well, that's true.
Sit, Richard. He has, nonetheless, expressed his willingness to speak with you for half an hour.
Oh,
Richard.
A whole hour, in fact, was what we agreed. 1 hour, I promise, and we'll be done.
No.
Well, by way of a compromise, 45 minutes?
Or thereabouts.
45 minutes and no more.
Oh, we haven't yet introduced ourselves. My name is Kurt Ries, and my colleague...
Yes, My name is Brown.
We're very pleased to meet you.
Well, then.
Are you staying, my dear?
If you don't mind.
Dr. Strauss.
Let me say at the start...
Yes?
For those of us who chose to remain in Germany, events here have been painful in the extreme. There have been times when I've been utterly dejected, in anguish. So much devastation. Opera houses and concert halls destroyed. Dresden, Vienna, Munich.
You were born in Munich, were you not?
That's correct.
In 1864.
Oh, correct again. Well done.
That's well done, Mr. Brown.
Thank you.
My childhood home, my birthplace. Well, that's gone now. Bombed last year. Though the commemorative plaque has survived, I understand. The two of you, I take it, haven't lived in Germany for some while.
We haven't, no.
Well, you'll have little notion, therefore, of what we have suffered during the war.
Ah, I wouldn't have thought at Garmisch
It's been hard. Very hard.
Hmm. But no bombs have fallen here.
No, but there have been shortages, Mr. Rees.
Ah.
And we've experienced a fearful decline in income. Hmm. To make a bit of money, would you believe it, my husband has been obliged to write out copies of some of his most celebrated pieces.
But I'm glad to say that there have been new works, too, despite the disturbances and difficulties.
Dr. Strauss has displayed this facility throughout his career, carrying on, concentrating on the task in hand.
Mm, yes.
Nothing can get in the way of the music.
Dr. Strauss.
Nothing.
Dr. Strauss.
Let the world go where it will, the music must be written.
In the last few weeks, I should tell you, I have finished another composition. Quite extraordinary work. Music reflecting my sense of loss, my deep-felt reaction to the wretchedness and the horror. I called the piece Metamorphosen.
Dr. Strauss is very pleased with it.
Well, I have to say, as a consequence of writing it, I feel somehow
purged.
Yes.
You've thrown off the weight of your misery and now...
A new beginning.
Dr. Strauss...
After the despair, there can only be hope. Without hope, there's nothing. Germany is defeated. Germany is in ruins, but she'll rise again. No, I don't mean with regard to her political or military strength. I'm referring to music. The true expression of the German soul. Hmm. I have plans.
Plans?
Oh, yes.
Dr. Strauss.
He has plans.
For opera in particular. With renewal, do you see, comes the chance for reform.
Hmm.
The repertoire, it requires alteration, so that the performance in this country of the best grand opera is segregated from that of other operatic works.
Dr. Strauss.
In each of our larger cities, therefore, two opera houses must be provided. And the larger of these...
I'd like to ask
you... Well, we might call it a museum of grand opera.
With regard to the last 12 years
or so... This opera house would take on a role similar to that of an art gallery full of treasures.
The reading
and
public.
And in each city it will offer the same select list of operas agreed upon, I trust, without too much argument.
The reading public, Dr. Strauss, would be very interested to learn how you've managed under the Nazis. You must have found, despite your ability to pursue an independent path, that the regime imposed on you certain pressures, constraints.
You were saying, Richard, about your museum.
Yes. The museum's operas, the chosen ones, will be presented according to a fixed schedule, with artists of the highest, the very highest quality. And just as a painting in a gallery is the same from one year to the next, so the production of each opera will persist from cycle to cycle in perpetuity, changeless and immutable, a legacy for all time. Do you see?
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Impressive, is it not?
And some of your own operas.
Oh, yes.
I've not yet decided exactly how many. Only this morning, my wife and I... Are you familiar with intermezzo?
Oh.
Intermezzo?
He's very proud of it, or claims to be.
Domestic material. An episode in the married life of Dr. and Mrs. Strauss. I rather suspect, in all honesty, that it's... A masterpiece. But to spare my wife any aggravation and to protect myself from her wrath, we shall talk no more about intermezzo.
Dr. Strauss...
Except to say that the first production in Dresden, a few of the rooms here, the dining room certainly, this very room too, I think. Do you remember, my dear?
No, I don't remember.
They were reproduced on stage in remarkable detail.
Dr. Strauss, you are recognized as Germany's greatest composer. I mean greatest living composer.
That's what I assume you meant.
International reputation, respected and revered, in possession of an honorary doctorate.
Yes.
University of Heidelberg, 1903.
Oh, you know your stuff, sir.
So it must seem. Dr. Strauss, you were someone whom the Nazis, when they came to power, couldn't afford to overlook. Your status was such that it was crying out to be employed, exploited, by men who were all too aware of the importance of propaganda. Joseph Goebbels, most especially.
Mr. Rees.
And in turn, it was only to be expected that you would have spotted a few beneficial possibilities in the new regime. March 1933. Bruno Walter, a man you dislike.
Oh, well, let's say we didn't quite get on.
A disciple of Mahler, a Jew. He was booked to conduct a concert in Berlin, but was obliged to stand down after learning that it was likely to be disrupted by Nazi thugs and that protection couldn't be guaranteed. And then...
Yes, Dr. Strauss was asked to take Walter's place. At first he refused. He only agreed after serious deliberation. Mm.
My concern was for the members of the orchestra. Mm. I didn't want the concert cancelled and the players to go without.
Very commendable. You inserted one of your own works into the concert programme, I believe.
Yes.
But, well, we'll let that pass.
He refused the conductor's fee, you know. The money went to the musicians. Also, it was Walter himself who suggested that my husband should replace him.
True?
Of course it's true!
I was asking your husband.
It's what I was told.
An unfortunate affair, though. I remember it. Brought you some rather bad publicity.
Quite undeserved.
One of those cases where, however honourable the motives, the impression just isn't that good.
Yes.
You were called a lackey. A lackey?
Shameful. Monstrous.
Well, it was Thomas Mann.
Thomas Mann? Oh, well, I'm not surprised. Forgive me, Kurt. Continue.
Thank you.
But, Mr. Rees, if you do, I must insist that your questions are solely concerned with my husband's music.
As you wish. A month or two later, a similar occurrence. In protest against the ever-increasing displays of anti-Semitism in Germany, Toscanini pulled out of conducting Parsifal at Bayreuth.
Mr. Rees.
Zottwengler refused to. Once again, Strauss saved the day.
I don't, in truth, have an excess of fondness for Parsifal, so I got through it in record time. Yeah. The performance was something of a triumph.
And then...
Mr. Rees?
That same year, the Reich Music Chamber was established.
Correct.
Mr. Rees?
The RMC's purpose was to promote true, total German music and to remove anything degenerate. That is, anything deemed to be untuneful. Atonal stuff. The kind of sounds that were attributed particularly to Jews. No?
Well, as it happens...
Dr. Goebbels offered you the presidency of this new body, and you accepted.
Yes.
And in your speech at the RMC's first convention, you gave thanks to Hitler and to Goebbels, and you described the founding of the chamber as a vital step in the reconstruction of German musical life.
The truth is...
In your stated view, the RMC would promote healthy creativity and eradicate whatever was musically sick and dangerous.
The truth is, I didn't seek the presidency.
No,
enough
but
of this.
Life would have been very much easier without it.
For Jewish musicians, Dr. Strauss, life would have been very much easier without the RMC.
Enough!
I rather think, Kurt, that you should allow Dr. Strauss to answer your question, if there was a question.
Thank you. As I say, I didn't seek the presidency. But I hope that by accepting it, I could achieve some improvement for musicians. With regard, I mean, to royalties and pay.
Yes. Such improvement, of course, was for Aryans only. Jews, on the other hand...
Any measures affecting Jewish musicians were taken without my agreement, and in many respects, you see, the presidency was merely a title. Let me make myself quite clear, Mr. Rees. The treatment given to the Jews was a disgrace to German honour. A violation of all recognised decency.
Did you express this opinion? In public, I mean.
It was an act of folly, too.
Enough.
The quality of performance was bound to
Indeed,
suffer.
Indeed, yes, it was. Good point.
You see...
Richard, please.
I had no idea. I thought when Hitler came to power, I thought that the extremism, the hysteria...
Richard.
It would all...
Blow over?
Yes.
And when it didn't, not to worry. The outcome was to your advantage.
Mr. Rees?
Thanks to the exclusion of Jewish composers, you were restored, were you not, to your position of artistic eminence?
I wasn't aware, Mr. Rees, that such a position had ever been lost.
Enough! This must stop!
Yes, my dear, but not yet. You listen to me, Mr. Rees. I was never a friend to the Nazis. I did the very least I could for them. Dr. Goebbels disliked me and I returned the compliment. And the presidency of the Reich Music Chamber was taken away from me after just a couple of years. You might also consider the fact that my librettists, my two great librettists, were both Jews. Well, in Hoffmannsthal's case, there was some Jewish blood there, but Stefan Zweig was entirely a Jew. The letter which I sent to Zweig and which was intercepted by the Gestapo and shown to Hitler, the trouble we encountered with the production of The Silent Woman, is any of that in your notes? My son's wife, Alice, is she in your notes?
Oh, yes, she's in my notes. Just give me a second.
Richard.
She's Jewish.
Yes.
In her case, you did at least try. You pulled strings. Here we are. Von Schirach, former head of Hitler Youth, Gauleiter of Vienna, responsible for the deportation of many thousands of Viennese Jews as a way, he claimed, of making a contribution to European culture. You got in touch with him, seeking protection for Alice.
Yes, I got in touch with him.
That was a crime, was it, Mr. Rees? And when my husband learned that Alice's grandmother was in a concentration camp, and he drove all the way there and went up to the gates and announced himself and asked that the poor creature be released, was that not kind? Was that not virtuous and brave?
I think it was. Very much so. The result of the visit?
She wasn't released. She died.
Oh. Unfortunate. Still.
I suppose you're a Jew, are you, Mr. Rees?
I am.
And I suppose that you've been talking to other Jews, and you've picked up a few pieces of malicious rumour about my husband, and you've decided that you must pay him a call, throw your accusations at him, and derive some perverted sort of pleasure from the process, and then...
Dr. Strauss is perfectly welcome to challenge any of my statements.
Challenge them? You demand that right, do you? Dr. Strauss, Germany's greatest composer...
Greatest living composer.
An honourable man, a good man. He must refute every allegation, must he?
I'd have thought he'd want to, if he could.
Get out.
I'm sorry?
Get out. Now.
Oh, dear.
Dr. Strauss, we said 45 minutes, if you recall.
Yes, it was a gentleman's agreement.
I'll see you to the door, and your friend.
Oh, with great respect, Mrs. Strauss.
Come.
Mrs. Strauss.
The interview
with
is
respect,
over.
With respect, I've done nothing that might be considered offensive. In fact, I've hardly said a word. I'm not a friend of Mr. Rees, an acquaintance, merely. Haven't seen him for years. Confirm, please. Mr. Rees.
Yes, Mr. Brown, an acquaintance merely.
But we met this morning, quite by chance. Dr. Strauss, there's so much to talk about. With regard to music, I mean.
Well, that's true. There is, if you'd let me.
I've nothing prepared. No list of questions to work through. But you can talk and I'll listen.
And you'll write it up?
The American Forces newspaper. Huge circulation. And with luck, it'll get used elsewhere. I'm to stay.
Yes.
It's very kind.
You have half an hour at the most.
That's splendid. And, my dear, if Mr. Brown asks about intermezzo, I won't say a word.
Mr. Rees?
You shan't be wanting my notes, then.
No, thanks.
Ingratiating, Mr. Brown. Cunning, Mr. Brown.
Foolish, hot-headed Mr. Rees.
I'll be waiting in the jeep.
Mr. Rees?
Yes, I'm coming.
I apologize for my colleague. He shouldn't have spoken to you as he did.
No, oh, my dear fellow, please. One can understand.
Perhaps. Being Jewish, though, is no excuse. I'm a bit of a Jew myself, or perhaps you've guessed.
If it had been left to me, I'd have allowed him to stay. I'm sure I could have persuaded him to take a more measured view, but I was beginning to think that Pavlina was on the verge of one of her tirades. She's a sensitive soul, really. Inside the sharp prickles, cares deeply. She's been the perfect companion. Fire and passion to my complacency. It's such a shame about her career. As a mother and a housewife, though, she's been superb, exemplary, a stickler for cleanliness. Some people, oh, one can't deny it, find her Well, almost everyone does, in truth. Oh, my word, the hours I've spent attempting to mend fences. Oh, extraordinary woman. Close the door, if you will. Intermezzo.
Yes.
A true life incident. 1902, some 8 years after Paulina and I had married, and I was on the Isle of Wight, enjoying a brief holiday.
Alone?
Alone. I'd been conducting in London. Paulina, back at home, opened a letter which had arrived in my absence. It was from a woman.
Oh.
I expected to see you in the Union Bar, said the letter, but you weren't there. I'd be much obliged, therefore, if the tickets you promised me could be left at the above address. Paulina was furious. Paulina was beside herself. She sent me a telegram demanding a divorce. Our marriage, it seemed, was over. Until I managed to persuade her that I'd never heard of the letter writer, that wherever the Union Bar might be, I'd never been in it, and that the letter, as ought to have been perfectly clear, had been addressed to me in error. And there, in essence, you have the story of Intermezzo. Real life. Real conversation, word for word, as I remembered it.
Real rooms.
Real rooms, indeed. The opera is an expression of my love for Paulina. But she doesn't see it quite like that. Her reaction would be so bad, I think, if she didn't feel such a sense of inferiority, lack of fulfilment. I have to say, though, I'm rather fond of the Isle of Wight. Now, it seems to me, Mr. Brown, that the weather this morning is far too good to waste. Let me show you the grounds.
Oh. Extensive, these grounds of yours.
Well, they certainly are. Takes an old man a while to walk around them, so I don't very often.
Extremely impressive.
Extremely overgrown. One of the gardeners, I'm afraid, was called up, despite my best efforts.
Oh, back soon, perhaps.
No. He won't be back.
I'm sorry.
It's dreadful, truly dreadful. So much grief, so much torment. But taking a personal point of view, I ought not to complain. Could have been a lot worse.
You and your wife, you've come through it all. And your splendid house has survived intact.
Yes.
How many rooms?
19 at the last count.
19?
How, you ask, was it all paid for?
How was it all paid for?
Salome.
Ah, Salome, yes. What a girl.
After the premiere, the Kaiser announced that he liked my music as a rule, but Salome, he said, would do me a lot of damage. Well...
In fact, it made you filthy rich.
I guess how much I got for the publishing rights alone.
Heavens.
60,000 marks.
60,000?
By the by, I'm not ashamed to talk money. A great piece of music, in my view, music that is expected to endure for a considerable while.
Generations? Centuries?
Great music, as I say, deserves a great payment in return.
And as regards your reputation?
After Salome? I was discredited in stuffy circles, but I didn't much bother about that.
Salome was scandalous. Salome was sensational. Suicide, incestuous desire, decapitation, necrophilia, it's all there. It's shocking. One shouldn't have to be confronted with such ghastliness. Put out the torches. Hide the moon.
Hide the stars. The music was as provocative as the text.
It pushed the limits, or seemed to. You became a modernist for a while, an avant-gardist, an enfant terrible.
But hardly an enfant. I was 40. Tell me, Mr. Brown, are you familiar with very much of my work?
No, I wouldn't say so. Over the years, I suppose I couldn't really avoid some of it.
You know Rosencavalier, of course.
Oh, of course. Now, that didn't shock. It entranced.
Ah.
There you are.
Yes, Pavlina, here we are.
You didn't tell me you were going outside.
No, my dear. Mr. Brown and I have progressed very little in terms of distance covered, but we've found ourselves to be perfectly companionable. And I've said nothing untoward, as far as I'm aware. Nothing that will get me into hot water.
Nothing at all.
And besides, Mr. Brown is an enthusiast of my music. You've no need to fear.
Will we see what you write, Mr. Brown?
I'll make sure you do.
I mean, before it's published.
Oh, no, that won't be possible.
You'd rather not oblige us.
I can't, I'm afraid.
Have you been in the American Army very long, Mr. Brown?
Not very long.
Active service?
No.
I thought not. You don't look much like a soldier.
No, I don't feel like one.
So, my dear, Mr. Brown and I...
Yes. Very well.
And we promise to behave ourselves.
Absolutely.
You won't forget when you come back in.
We won't forget.
What won't we forget?
Feet. Matt.
Ah, yes.
We were talking about Rosenkavalier.
We were.
It didn't shock. It entranced.
Hofmannsthal's libretto. It's excellent.
Yeah.
There's a passage that I find quite compelling. Where the Marshalin bemoans the passing of the years. She's only... Well, what's her age?
30 or a little more.
But that's too old, she's certain, for the man she loves. Mm. He's bound to leave her for somebody younger and prettier. Time, declares the Marshalin, means nothing when one's carelessly living day to day. But then, of a sudden... One's conscious of nothing else. Time's all around me, she complains. I feel time trickling across my face. Time trickles across the mirror I gaze into. Time flows
around my temples.
I seem to hear it flowing inexorably. I get up in the middle of the night.
And I go through every room and I stop the clocks.
Yes, yes, yes. I've just had a thought. Whiston Norden, the English poet. Some lines of his. Stop all the clocks, cut off the telephone. Next time I see him, I must ask him.
I've heard of Norden. He went to America.
Yes.
He's homosexual.
Oh, very much so. But not a Jew.
How do you know him?
He's a friend of a friend. Oh, when I was young, I was utterly enthralled by opera. Wagner, I loved. Lohengrin, the Flying Dutchman. Wagner before he became too Wagnerian. For you, I suppose he's the master.
He'll never be surpassed. Bach, Beethoven, Wagner. Oh, three great peaks on the mountain range. Germany's most magnificent contribution to Western culture.
And Richard Strauss, another great peak.
Yes. Yes. That's my judgment.
Well, fair enough.
Not to pretend to be modest.
An absurd affectation.
Exactly.
And after the Straussian peak?
Oh, as far as I can tell, the foothills at best, the flatlands I fear. What else can I say?
Wagner, he's going to be a big problem now, isn't he? In the past, there were some of us who felt a certain unease about him. We delighted in the music, but we couldn't easily forget about the man. Perpetually, though, we were contriving to excuse him, to shut our eyes and embrace him, forgive him for what he was in return for what he'd accomplished. And then, Nazi time. The master, for reasons that aren't very surprising, became the patron saint of National Socialism. His music was the accompaniment to the strutting of jackboots. So, am I to love Wagner still? Am I to love the master, knowing that the leader loved him too?
The music will prevail. I will forget.
I won't. Wagner will be denazified inevitably, in time. But I won't forget.
Art and politics must always be kept separate. An artist is an artist and ought to perform his role with the minimum of interference and distraction. It's appalling, you know, that a creative figure like myself should have had to endure such unsettled times. But I've tried to get on with my work as best I can. Kaisers, presidents, chancellors, heaven knows how many ministries during the Republic. Well, they've come and gone.
But you've sailed through, somehow.
Well, I've managed.
When Hitler took power, you had, as you said, no idea.
No, that's right.
But with regard to music, at least, you must have felt some reason to be hopeful. Under National Socialism, all things you thought were possible. Yes. All sorts of things, as it transpired. Unspeakable things. Unimaginable things. What could you do there?
What could anyone do? My own daughter-in-law.
Yes.
My hands were tied. I had to...
accommodate.
I wanted to be left alone, get on with my work. But there were always situations to be dealing with. Disagreeable events. The premiere of Asylum Woman with Hitler and Goebbels due to attend. Stefan Zweig had written the libretto.
Zweig, yes, a Jew, as you reminded us.
Yes.
A full Jew.
A full Jew, indeed. On account of which fact, his name, I discovered, was omitted from the poster. Well, this, I said, was unacceptable. The poster must bear his name. And in letters as large as Hofmannsthal's had been for Rosenkavalier.
You made a stand.
Yes.
You succeeded.
Oh, yes.
I applaud you. Cynics, I suppose, might argue that there was some self-interest involved. Zweig, you reasoned, needed to be assured of solidarity here. You weren't keen to lose him.
But I did lose him. And the opera was very quickly withdrawn.
Unfortunate. Art and politics.
Yes.
Your presidency of the Reich Music Chamber, well, that was politics.
I feel it was. And when it was taken away from me, that was politics too. Under National Socialism, the whole of life was politics, or so it seemed. But where an artist can keep himself aloof, apart, he should. Your parents still living, are they?
Yes.
Both of them German?
Yes.
You were brought up in Germany?
That's right.
Your face is familiar.
Is it?
I've met you before. Or has your picture appeared in the papers for some reason?
If it has, I hope they found one that's flattering. The years, I'm afraid, have left their mark. Time, the great affliction, stop the clocks. You were born in 64, so what, you're...
80. 81, very soon.
Heavens. I can't see me living that long.
Can you not?
No, I'd have run out of things to do by then. I need to have things to do. Things with a purpose. When I left Germany, Dr. Strauss, I was constantly campaigning, giving lectures, warning people about the Nazi threat. Arguing after the war began that America must join in. This all helped to keep the mind from straying into dark places where it was better not to be.
I'm beginning to get the impression that, outside of Germany at least, you're a person of some significance.
Significance? Oh, well, the FBI wondered about me for a while. My premature anti-fascism rather worried them. But despite their suspicions, I became a US citizen, joined the army... I was happy about that. Well, I wasn't so very miserable. A job to do. Defeating evil. Regular money for the first time in my life. And now, evil is defeated. Not true, of course. Evil will never be defeated. But one flatters oneself that it's suffered a temporary setback. Oh, now. What is this?
This, Mr. Brown, is a shrine. A memorial to Guntram.
Guntram? A favourite dog, was he?
No. No, 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 no. An early opera.
Oh.
My firstborn. Go ahead, read the inscription.
Here lie the ashes of Guntram, an honourable and virtuous man, cruelly slain in his prime. Anno Domini, 1894. May he rest in peace.
The work's merits, we must assume, were not immediately recognized.
You're right, I'm afraid. Strange, I was thinking about Guntram only this morning. Trying to decide, you know, whether it should be included among the elite. For my museum of opera.
Oh, yes, that.
There's a medieval setting, Wagnerian, thoroughly imbued, in fact, with the spirit of the master. Following his example, I even wrote my own libretto. Guntram, our hero, belongs to a Christian pacifist brotherhood. He slays a cruel tyrant, but his good deed is done for the wrong reason, because he's in love with the tyrant's wife. Now then, Mr. Brown, what do you suppose happens in the end?
He kills himself.
Ah, no. He's brought to trial. The Brotherhood sits in judgment. Result?
He's found guilty.
And he's sent on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, yes?
Well, why not?
That's how it was in Draft One. But I changed my mind. I made a change in Guntram. He was a subservient conformist no longer. He achieved soft determination. You see, I've been growing increasingly interested in philosophy.
Nietzsche, I assume?
Oh, correct. I was devouring him, learning whole passages off by heart.
And as a result, you cancelled Guntram's trip to the Holy Land. God, you discovered, is dead.
Oh, I was aware of that much since I was a boy. Guntram, I realized, must refuse to submit to the Brotherhood's authority. No court, he announces in the revised version, no court can condemn or absolve me. My life is governed by laws of my own. I am my own judge. I determine my own atonement. But he leaves the Brotherhood. He organizes salvation for himself. Lives life the way he wants to. Free. Independent. Now, the opera caused a lot of fuss. Some people, Cosima Wagner in particular, assumed that I was making a statement, a declaration of intent.
Were you?
Oh, yes. And from now on, I'd strike out on a new path, shake off what I saw as the more oppressive elements of Wagner's influence.
And perhaps you contemplated an entire change in your personal life, or at least a validation of what you were already becoming, the new Guntram, doing as you pleased.
Well, doing what seemed right, according to my principles.
Rejecting what didn't suit. Being selfish, for the sake of your art. Asserting yourself, scorning society. Nietzsche's will to power, and so on.
I think on reflection that you and I did meet.
Yes.
Some while ago, but where was it?
Munich.
Why? Why did we meet?
It was during the festival. My mother introduced me. She felt she should, since you were there.
Brown.
When I was young, Dr. Strauss, I was given the notion, or I took it for granted, that life would be easy. My background, my father's circle of friends.
Brown.
No. Quite a lot of it's been sheer hell.
Ah, but you've changed your name.
I should have done. I should have changed my identity, cut myself adrift. Become an orphan, become something other than the palest of imitations. Not possible, perhaps. We are who we are because of others, because of the grown-ups especially. But I could have tried. Tell me, Dr. Strauss, do you ever have regrets? Do you ever experience remorse?
I regret the war, naturally. I regret the situation that brought it about. And I feel immeasurable sadness at what has happened, the damage inflicted on our culture. The bombing of our concert halls and opera houses, and Goethe's house in Weimar. Goethe's house, the most sacred place on earth, destroyed. That was shocking beyond words, Mr. Brown. Come inside. I want to show you my most recent composition. Well, naturally, one can regard all one's music as a reflection of one's character and attitudes of one's life.
Yes.
And there are works of mine, well, a few. Thank you. Which are recognized as being autobiographical to a significant degree.
Intermezzo, for
yes, instance. Yes, intermezzo. The Symphonia Domestica. This latest piece, though.
Dr. Strauss.
Max!
Oh, yes, my dear. Apologies.
Is Mr. Brown not leaving?
Well, soon. But before he does, he needs to see that Richard Strauss still has some music in him.
I never doubted it. You mentioned the title earlier.
Metamorphosen.
Grim stuff, that. No laughing matter.
My wife's quite right, as she invariably is.
About?
About Metamorphosen. Grim stuff. But what can one do at such a time? Write another Rosenkavalier? Oh, Mr. Brown,
Nothing I've achieved before, nothing can be compared with this piece. The music expresses my profound emotions as I've reflected on what has been the most tragic period, has it not, in the history of mankind. The score you'll find on the desk. Thank you. Now, imagine, in place of a pair of antique, arthritic, clumsy hands, 23 accomplished solo strings. Grim but powerful, despite my old age. As the piece progresses, it offers hints of Beethoven, the funeral march from the Eroica. These illusions weren't really deliberate. They seemed to just slip out of my pen. At the end, though, last page, if you will.
Oh, last page.
I quote from the funeral march directly. And in the full score, underneath the final bars, I've written, in memoriam.
In memoriam of your country, your countrymen.
Well, yes.
And of all your countrymen, Hitler most particularly. As the Eroica relates to Napoleon, so this piece is about the Führer. Is that the idea? The savior became a cruel tyrant. It's a metamorphosis with fearful consequences. You're in mourning, you'll say, for art as well, for German culture destroyed by the war. You should have spared yourself your grief. German culture was dead already. It died when the thugs took over, and nothing could be encouraged that wasn't Aryanized and Nazified. The Jews, there was no doubting it. They've been this country's misfortune. Out with them. Down with Mendelssohn. Beware Mozart. His librettist was a Jew. Perform Judas Maccabeus if you must, but change the title and rewrite the text.
Madness, it was all madness.
Well, let's not absolve the perpetrators. They knew what they were doing, and so did those who went along with them. There must, Dr. Strauss, be some sort of reckoning. Wouldn't you agree?
Mr. Rees?
Oh, yes.
I've brought you a glass of lemonade.
Oh, despite my dreadful behaviour.
Here.
How kind. Cheers. If I promise to be good...
No. You won't be allowed back in. You should have thought. You should have written a word of stern advice to yourself in those notes of yours.
I should have remembered that music is your husband's life. All topics other than music, they're, well, as that sign says, off limits.
Mr. Rees, I had no time for the Nazis, no time for them at all. But in my view, Dr. Strauss tried to stand up to them far too much, not too little. Because of his refusal to comply, he became vexed and anxious. His creativity was threatened. And our daughter-in-law's safety was endangered as well.
Had I been given the opportunity, I'd have liked to question Dr. Strauss about one or two of his songs, the words in them.
The songs he wrote for me.
Yes?
They were wonderful, glorious. And no one else could sing them as I did. No one else could capture their beauty, their intensity. If I'm staying, Mr. Rees.
Please do.
I shall want to sit down.
Oh, yes. Forgive me.
Thank you. No, it's all right. I've managed.
There's a song called The Little Brook, I think. If I look in my notes...
No, don't look in your notes. I didn't sing that song.
It was after your time.
Yes, Mr. Rees. It was after my death.
Your husband composed it, I imagine, when he was president of the Reich Music Chamber. It's dedicated to Goebbels. It goes, I am happy like a child, or something like that. He who has called me forth, he will be my Führer, my Führer, my Führer.
But the Führer, when that song was written, was not what he became. We didn't know.
Also, during the war, Dr. Strauss said a poem which contained lines about a plague from the east being driven out by a westerly wind. Rather ominous, wouldn't you say?
I'm not sure that I remember that song. I remember the songs that Richard wrote for me. I could sing you every word.
Sing me one of them.
No. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Don't be ridiculous.
Well then, tell me about yourself.
Ah, yes, of course. My experience, my life. Of no interest in itself, none whatsoever. But if I'm encouraged to talk about it, I'll let slip a few remarks concerning Dr. Strauss. I'm famously indiscreet, after all. I'm marvelled at for my bluntness. My father was a general. Did you know that?
I didn't, but I'm prepared to believe it.
Dr. Strauss's background, by contrast. His father's father was a district court usher. Relatives on his mother's side were in the brewing business.
Yes.
That was his birthplace. The brewery in Munich. If it hadn't been for music, you must understand, he could never have married someone from my social sphere. When we met, I'd already been studying to become a singer. I had a fine voice, good control, a generous sound, I was informed. But it was decided that I might benefit from some additional coaching.
And Richard Strauss became your tutor?
Yes.
Was it love at first sight?
No, Mr. Rees. It wasn't love at first sight.
I wonder, did you ever think of leaving Germany?
We spent some time in Vienna.
Oh, you have a house there as well?
Yes, we have a house there as well. I don't imagine what condition it's in.
What I meant was...
You meant, did I think of getting away from the Nazis altogether? That's not an easy decision. I face criticism either way.
True.
Well, towards the end, though, the choice was taken away from me. A ruling came from the top. I wasn't allowed to travel.
Why?
Unfortunate episode. Wounded soldiers, we were notified, were being brought to Garmisch, and we'd have to give up a number of the rooms here to accommodate them. I refused.
You refused?
Oh, yes. The home of someone of my standing invaded by strangers, violated, was impossible. An outrage.
They were soldiers, though.
Yes. But I didn't ask them to fight. Nothing to do with me. Wasn't my fault if they got themselves injured.
You said this to the authorities?
Of course.
And the response?
They ignored me. I was advised that the soldiers were coming anyway, and some refugees. An outrage.
One might have offered a degree of sympathy towards the refugees, perhaps even if one could extend it to the military.
That's not the point. Someone of my standing...
Yes, yes. What happened then?
I sought assistance.
From?
From Hitler.
Oh.
In a crisis, go to the man at the top.
Yes.
I wrote a letter to him, referred, amongst other points which I thought should work in my favour, to the Parsifal I'd conducted at Bayreuth. No luck. So I turned to Hans Frank.
Hans Frank? He's a friend of yours.
He's a man of culture. True music lover. Great admirer of my work. Well, he used his rank. Countermanded orders. Saved the day. But this was brought to Hitler's attention, and he didn't much like it. And there'd been the awful business with Schweig as well. So the decree went out that I was now persona non grata, do not touch. I remained, however, an irreplaceable artist, one whose music would continue to be performed. Curious situation.
Very. No invading soldiers, though?
Not one. A few refugees, after a while. But they were put in the rooms above the garage. There was more anxiety, mind you, a week or two ago when your American colleagues arrived in Garmisch. They wanted to take over the whole house.
What's the term?
Requisition it.
Exactly. So I spoke to the fellow in charge. I said, I am Dr. Richard Strauss, the internationally renowned composer. And I showed him some of my manuscript scores and a certificate of honorary citizenship that I had received in America. And the officer shook my hand and declared himself to be a true music lover. And he knew Rosenkavalier. Or did he say that he'd heard of it? And he assured me that he had no wish to subject an internationally renowned composer to any inconvenience. So, up went the sign.
Yes, yes, saw it as we came in. Well done. The house remains unviolated. Your friend, Hans Frank, he isn't merely a true music lover. He's been awarded the title The Butcher of Poland. Has the news not reached you? While he was Governor General there, thousands of Poles were killed. Tens of thousands.
If that were true...
You doubt it.
It'd be shocking. Shocking. You have to appreciate such things were kept from us.
Or if they weren't, deaf ears were turned.
Mr. Brown...
Besides, what could you do?
Let me tell you, Mr. Brown, those of us who stayed in Germany, we weren't collaborators. Nor, though, were we traitors to our country. Germany's cause was not one that we could all believe in. This wasn't the Great War, fought a second time. But no matter, we stayed. We suffered. We endured to the end. We are innocent. We are victims.
A rehearsal for Guntram. Mr. Zeller is singing the title role, and Richard stops him several times. Rap, rap, rap on the desk. No, Mr. Zeller, it isn't B-flat. No, Mr. Zeller, you're a bar too early. No, Mr. Zeller, and so on. But I, on the other hand, I haven't been stopped at all. So I stop. Dear Mr. Anna, says Richard, what's wrong? Why have you stopped? I stopped, I reply, because you never make me stop, which isn't fair. Mr. Zeller is allowed to practice his part over and over. Richard takes me to one side. The fact is, he whispers, Mr. Zeller hasn't quite mastered what's required of him, whereas you, Paulina, are singing wonderfully. Nevertheless, I shout as he makes his way back to the podium, I refuse to be ignored. At that point, I throw my score at him, or try to, the aim isn't good, and then I walk off. Richard walks off after me, and we talk for some while. And when he returns, according to Richard, the orchestra leader embarks upon a speech. Mr. Anna's conduct, he announces, is deplorable. We are deeply distressed by it, and as a sign of the indebtedness we feel towards our esteemed conductor, we have agreed that if the lady in question is appointed to sing here in the future, we shall refuse to play. That's most unfortunate, Richard responds, because I've only this minute become engaged to her.
Excellent.
Richard tells it better than I do. It's one of his party pieces, you know. And he swears it's all true. We got married. As a wedding present, Richard gave me 4 beautiful songs.
Sing one of them.
No.
Please. Please.
And there'll be sunshine once again tomorrow. Beneath the sun, the two of us. No, Mr. Rees, I won't sing for you. I didn't marry on impulse. It was 7 years since we'd first met. I was very doubtful about the whole business, and some might say there was every reason to be. I have faults by the sackful, and Richard isn't without his shortcomings.
No?
He hides them better, though, than I hide mine, under the guise of his greatness.
You should never, you think, have got married. You weren't good for Dr. Strauss.
Oh, I was very good for Dr. Strauss.
Your own career, though.
It didn't last. It would have done. I'd established my reputation, and I had many years ahead of me. But suddenly, I was Paulina de Anna no longer. I was Mrs. Strauss, mother and housewife. It isn't fair on Richard, but I haven't quite forgiven him for that. I haven't forgiven myself. My one ambition, my chance of real achievement and fame, sacrificed, thrown away. It may surprise you, but I don't really want to spend my days as a domestic tyrant, obsessed with keeping the home spotlessly clean. But it gives me a role to play, helps me forget. I did once ask for a divorce. The incident that Richard used in intermezzo, a foolish confusion. But even when I knew the truth, knew that a mistake had been made, even then, I was slow to admit as much, slow to give up the idea that I might go my own way. I tell you, it's no joke being married to a genius. Someone who's either sitting at his desk intent on his work, do not disturb, or else heading off for yet another musical engagement, another bout of adulation. One feels very lonely and resentful. But despite all that, he and I, and such beautiful songs. If you've drunk your lemonade, Mr. Rees, I'll take the glass.
When was it you left Germany?
Early in 33.
No, you were quick to find life disagreeable here.
Quick? Heavens, no. I'd been troubled by events for a while, but I was like you, Dr. Strauss. I believed that politics should be left to the politicians. I minded my own business. And the sad fact is, there were too many others who did the same, which is why the Nazis were allowed to take power. When that happened, though, I had to get out. I tried my best to fight the regime. Tried in the only way I knew how, writing. Lobbing words across the border. It was a fairly futile gesture. But innocent people were being stripped of their possessions, driven out of the country or snatched from their homes and carted away, put into camps, slaughtered. I had to do something.
You were a writer, were you, before you left Germany? That was your profession.
I was a writer almost before I could hold a pen. It was in the blood. Plays, short stories, novels, articles, bits and pieces for cabaret. Done some acting, too. Some dancing.
Dancing? Your plays, were they performed?
A few.
And you've had your novels published?
I doubt if you'd have heard of any of them. There was one that caused a bit of a stir, but it was banned in Germany.
You're famous in some circles.
Notorious in some.
I know your face. I'm almost certain.
Of course, there were a number of brave souls, brave or foolish, who stayed in Germany and tried to offer opposition. And there were many others who had no love for the Nazis, but who did nothing, kept their heads down. Emotionally and spiritually, they went missing, emigrated, as it were, without ever leaving home. For you, the internationally renowned, irreplaceable artist, such disengagement...
It wasn't an option.
Besides, you wanted to write your music and you wanted the music to be performed.
It's a composer's natural wish.
Yes, indeed. And by the time Mr. Hitler came to power, Richard Strauss was well removed from the calculated modernity of Salome and Elektra, and the music he was creating didn't seem wholly divergent from what the Nazis thought they could approve of.
But that was hardly my fault.
Strauss had outlived himself. Strauss was a relic, a symbol of conservatism, but... as luck or good judgment would have it, he was back in fashion. The degenerates, Jews especially, they were out.
Oh, Mr. Brown...
You experienced the occasional awkwardness with Dr. Goebbels, but you hardly suffered. The fewer the Jews, the more the opportunities. You took advantage. Sought advantage.
No.
No? No? Surely. Stepping in for Bruno Walter? And for Toscanini? Ensuring goodwill with the Nazis when and where you could. The business with Thomas Mann.
What business?
The lecture he gave in Munich, you remember? Very soon, a mere week or two after Hitler became Chancellor, it was titled The Sorrows and Grandeur of Richard Wagner, or something like that.
I remember.
A simple thesis. Wagner had a great talent, but a shabby mind. The music was wondrous. The composer, a decadent dilettante. A charlatan. Such a notion was a great affront to the leading lights of Munich. Or if it wasn't, they pretended it was. A letter of protest must be written. If, Dr. Strauss, you took the trouble to read the text...
I read
it. Of the lecture, I mean.
Yes, I read it.
Then you must, I think, have found the views expressed there fairly familiar. There was no need, in fact, to read either the lecture or the letter. The point was, by attacking Wagner, it could be assumed Thomas Mann was attacking Nazism. When you signed the letter, therefore, you were demonstrating your allegiance to the regime.
That's not why I signed the letter.
Besides, Thomas Mann, in your opinion, was a thoroughly offensive fellow. Thomas Mann deserved slapping down.
That's as may be.
The letter did its job, did it not? Aroused quite a mood of hostility towards its victim. There were rumours, indeed, that if this intellectual traitor were to return from his holiday in Switzerland, he'd find that the situation would be less than pleasant. A place was waiting for him, perhaps, in a concentration camp. So, he never returned. And life of exile began.
Well, sooner or later he'd have abandoned Germany as you did. Disowned it, betrayed it. He settled in America, I understand. Oh, did you ever see him there?
Oh, often. On my last encounter with him, your name was mentioned in some connection or another. He called you a reptile. Or was it an arse-licker? Both, possibly.
Thomas Mann is your father.
He is.
How interesting. Oh, my apologies, Klaus Mann, for being so slow to guess the truth.
Oh, no, not at all. I did my best for a while to keep it from you. But it doesn't reflect too well on me, does it? I'm a sly, sneaky little bastard, am I not? My companion did at least have the good grace to be clumsily straightforward with you.
That letter... The reason I signed it, quite simply, is that I felt a profound disagreement with your father about Wagner. I wish to take an opportunity to demonstrate as much. Wagner, do you see, he may have held some flawed opinions, but his mind wasn't shabby. How on earth can great music be produced by a shabby mind?
Yes, I've been wondering as much myself. But the fact is, you could never tolerate Thomas Mann. He was a friend of Bruno Walter. He was as famous as you and younger. But most of all, he'd failed to be an enthusiast of your work. He'd been looking to you to show what must be achieved in the post-Wagnerian age, to set the tone, as it were, for German music in the 20th century. But after Elektra, he suggested, you completely lost your way. Let the side down.
You know, for my taste, he was too much in the ironic, sardonic vein. I read Buddenbrooks years ago, but I can't remember finishing it. Oh, by the by, you neglected to cite his homosexual tendency. That, I confess, was an aspect which I didn't find very appealing.
Richard?
Yes, my dear?
I think Mr. Brown should be on his way.
I must agree. One doesn't like to outstay one's welcome. Dr. Strauss?
No. Forgive me, but you can't go yet. Paulina, Mr. Brown and I aren't finished with each other.
Aren't we?
Not quite.
But we aren't.
Oh, but no, I'm not too tired, Paulina. My morning walk has invigorated me. Oh, I forgot to tell you. During our stroll through the grounds, we came upon the little memorial to Guntram.
Guntram, Mr. Brown, was a flop. A disaster.
Paulina, though, it's agreed, was magnificent.
Yes, she was. And Guntram was the only opera by my husband that I ever sang in. After Guntram, he lost his operatic nerve for several years. And by the time he'd regained it... I'll leave you then. But you won't be long.
Just a few minutes more, that's all.
You'll tell your wife who I am, will you not, once I've left the premises?
Oh, yes.
She'll be terribly cross with me. I'm glad I'll miss it. She'll be cross with you, too, if you admit the whole truth. She'll want to know why you insisted that I stay.
Yes.
To be honest, I thought you might have thrown me out a while ago. When it became clear to you that Mr. Brown wasn't quite the, uncritical admirer. But I suppose that being so assured of your own eminence, you couldn't bring yourself to do such a thing. And now, utterly disreputable as this son of man has proved to be, you still won't get rid of him. You hope, perhaps, that you'll somehow win him round? He's to be persuaded to write a pleasant, flattering piece about you after all? Hmm? Be warned. You might make matters worse.
What will you do now that the war's over?
I don't know. I won't stay in Germany.
But after years spent in foreign lands, striving in the great cause, have you no wish to help towards the country's recovery, be part of the process of regeneration?
I'd been away too long. It's better not to go back. I, visited Munich recently. The notion came to me that I should see the family home. It had been seized by the Nazis in 1933. Fine building. Oh, not as grand as this. I was hopeful that it would have escaped any damage, since it was on the outskirts of the city. But when I got there, I discovered that the roof had disappeared and at least part of the interior was wrecked. Someone came out onto the second floor balcony, a young woman. She looked at me. I used to live here, I said. The room that's just behind you, it's mine, what's left of it. We talked. I learnt that during the Nazi years, the building had been used as a breeding house.
A breeding house?
Stud farm. The extermination camp's companion piece. As Jews must be slaughtered, so the most racially valuable Aryans must reproduce. Hurrah for the master race.
I'm sorry.
About the stud farms?
Perhaps your father will return, reclaim his property.
He might never be very keen to live there if he learns about its recent past. Besides, he shares my disenchantment with Germany, and he seems reasonably happy in Los Angeles. Sees a fair bit of Bruno Walter, actually. As does Erica, my sister. But no, on such a delicate matter, my lips are sealed.
Your sister and Bruno Walter? But he's an old man.
And he's married. And so is Erica, nominally.
Yes, I remember now. W.H. Auden, your friend. That's how I heard about him, when he married your sister.
Actually, it was more a matter of her marrying him to obtain British citizenship. It's a nice photograph of them. He's in a suit and tie, and so she. I thought that it was all rather decent of Auden, and I told him as much, but he was perfectly nonchalant. What else, he said, are buggers for?
Your father?
Yes?
Is he a supporter of your writing?
Not really.
You bear a grudge against Thomas Mann, do you?
Oh, not too much, I hope. He's supremely gifted, and I'm of a lower order. And that's been very hard. He inspired me without trying. And without trying, he cast me down. Then again, it might have been worse if he'd taken an interest. Or, for that matter, if he'd been shocked by my displays of delinquency. But he was too busy to notice, or he pretended to be. You were made aware of me, I hope, in my naughty days.
Oh, yes. Your face did indeed appear in the papers. Ostentatiously unconventional behaviour.
Very much so.
Drugs.
In excess. Marijuana, cocaine, morphine, heroin. I've had a busy chemical life. I was, some might say, thoroughly, thoroughly decadent. But not nearly as debauched as I would have hoped. And, in case you were wondering, my sister and I, though terribly fond of each other, we were always merely siblings. Sexual relations with a woman. I refute the charge. The proletarian male is what I go for. Porters, waiters, lift boys, get the idea. Oh, I trust I haven't given offence. I trust the composer of Salome isn't mortified. Keep the torches lit, I say. Allow the moonlight in. Oh, but then again, there isn't much about me that's ever been concealed. Unlike you, I can afford to be candid, can't I?
Something has occurred to me, prompted, I suspect, by your catalogue of vices. It would seem that once you left Germany, you were very energetic in your campaign against National Socialism.
You found a cause you thought worth fighting for, and you strove hard to achieve it. But the purpose of your great endeavour, the real purpose, I mean, behind the lofty principle, was a return to the good old days, the days of your youth, when you showed off those juvenile excesses of yours and nobody spoke to you severely or threatened to lock you up. Life when life was worth living, when life was fun. But the Nazis spoilt it all.
They certainly did that.
And on account of the Nazis, you acquired idealism. Or thought you did. Although, in fact...
Yes, of course, it was merely nostalgia.
You realise as much, eventually. You've acknowledged the truth. Germany would never be as it was, nor would you. You were wiser, sadder, still seeking attention, but in a different way. If Germany can't be reclaimed, you declared, let it be destroyed. Let the bombs drop, even on the family home. Your botched career reached its triumphant climax. You put on the uniform of an American soldier and cheered wildly as your former homeland tottered to defeat.
Not quite fair. No bombs, preferably. Preferably no war. But what choice was there?
Oh, you had a choice. You chose to leave, join the other side. And now that the war's over, you could choose to live here, but you won't. This isn't your country anymore. Even if it was, it offers you nothing. But before you leave it a second time, you offer a snide, unpleasant goodbye, a little kick at Germany while she's down. In Garmisch lives Dr. Strauss. He stayed on through the difficult years. He didn't make a dash for safety. You pay him a call. Smiling, exuding charm, concealing your identity, prompting him to talk about himself. And in the piece you plan to write, you'll wrench his words out of context, distort their meaning, disparage him, ridicule him. Small creature that you are! This is what you do best. Firing arrows at those who stand above you. And won't your father be delighted when you send him your article, when he sees how his errant son has wounded an old enemy? Oh, he'll love you for it.
Oh, now this is a much smarter scheme. Instead of a tedious self-defense, instead of trying to persuade your discourteous visitor that he might be wrong about you, you've gone on the attack and revealed Klaus Mann in all his inadequacy and hopelessness. With some help from Klaus Mann, of course, whose many failings are his favourite topic. The result, you hope, is that you'll seem like a giant by comparison. And the feeble Klaus, aware of how insignificant he is, will remember, when he scribbles his article for that wretched armed forces rag, not to be too unkind about you.
Well?
Dr. Strauss, believe me, I recognise your achievements, but I have the same trouble with you, I'm afraid, as I do with Wagner. On the one hand, there's the man. On the other, there's his music. Being and doing. Why can't we excel at both? Whatever your failings, though, you aren't obliged to acknowledge them. You can pretend to be Guntram. Your own judge with your own laws. And you don't have to worry either about trying to understand the horrors of the world outside. National socialism, that's not a problem at all. No need to join the party or wear the swastika. But an occasional straight-arm salute won't do any harm. Hmm? Are you a cunning schemer or a coward? Bit of both, perhaps. Play the system. Accommodate. Heil Hitler!
Get out!
And never mind that your leader takes Germany into a meaningless war. Never mind that millions of innocent people go to their deaths in gas chambers. What's that to Richard Strauss, as long as he has his music?
Get out!
Talking of which, Metamorphosen, music you said that you were compelled to write. I admit I was taken in for a while. I almost thought you cared. I almost thought you were shedding a few tears for the lives that had been lost, but the tears were for yourself. Stricken in years as you are, bereft of your opera houses, fearful of what kind of future there'll be for your life's work. In memoriam, Richard Strauss.
I refuse to hear any more of this. I refuse.
Quite right.
You are Dr. Richard Strauss. How could you live with yourself if you knew the truth?
Get out!
No. Please, leave the angry eruptions to your wife.
A final word, Dr. Strauss. From you, I mean. Something in mitigation. An attempt at an apology.
An apology?
It might be expected, I think, in the circumstances.
Klaus Mann. This country of mine, this country that once was yours, it took a wrong path. And its people suffered, and I confess, I lost all hope for the future. But Germany will recover. Germany will revive. And Germany will manage its recovery, and manage it very well, I'm sure, without people such as you.
Bravo. Yes, you're right. You are right. But still, no apology. No apology. No shame.
Go.
I'm going. You and I, we're finished.
At last, sorry, at last!
Sorry to keep you.
He wanted you to stay longer, I suppose. But you had pity on me and made your excuses.
Yes, if you like.
Well?
We chatted.
Yes.
He talked about this and that.
Worth rather more than a couple of paragraphs in the Stars and Stripes?
Perhaps.
I hope you're not being secretive.
No.
Oh, damn it, you were with him long enough.
Yes, he did offer a few remarks and he had a few well-chosen words to say about me. But I knew them already.
They've gone. At last. Richard?
Yes.
They've gone.
Good.
I promise you, you're right. About Guntram. It's full of beautiful music.
Yes.
And your songs. The songs you wrote for me. Beautiful.
Yes, true.
And there'll be sunshine once again tomorrow. Beneath the sun, the two of us, my dearest, shall meet again upon the path I'll follow. What's the matter? Richard.
I did my best. I did my duty as an artist. But Paulina, what if after so much endeavour, there must be survival, do you see? A legacy for all time. But if those vile, shameful words of his are believed, if they're shown to be true, does that not alter everything? The great achievement, it's damaged, is it not? It's defaced, ruined.
Richard, what's happened? What did he say to you? Oh, my dearest, tell me. Oh, what's wrong?
In Hide the Moon by Martin Wade, Richard Strauss was played by David Calder. Paulina Strauss was Sean Phillips. Klaus Mann, Alan Raglan, and Kurt Rees, Mark Edelhunt. The pianist was Peter Ringrose. The director was Marion Nancaro.
Drama on Three continues at the same time next week with a new production of Richard II, starring Joel McCormack. The play has been recorded binaurally, highlighting the King's subjective worldview. You can find out more by going to the Radio 3 website or on the Radio iPlayer app and searching for Drama on Three. And you can find more editions of Drama on Three on the Radio 3 website.
The winner of the BBC Young Musician 2016 is Sheku Kane Mason.
Sheku Kane Mason joins the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain to perform the work with which he won the coveted BBC Young Musician competition, Shostakovich's first cello concerto. Then Shostakovich's searing Fifth Symphony. Meet the brightest young musicians in the country on Radio 3 in concert this Tuesday evening at 7:30.
Well, right now here on Radio 3, it's 10:30 and time for tonight's Early Music Late, presented by Simon Hayes.
Welcome to an international fusion of styles this evening as early music meets world music in a historical journey in which we'll be tracing the roots of slavery from the 15th to the 19th centuries. Our guide is the veteran Spanish viol player and conductor Jordi Savall, who's drawn together a wide range of music and musicians, linking the people and places affected by the worst aspects of the slave trade. Through music, Savall says, we can best understand the past. The slave trade began with Portuguese and Spanish traders taking African slaves to the American colonies they'd conquered in the 15th century. So we begin with music by the 15th century Spanish composer Mateo Flecha, which weaves in an African dance known as the gugurumbe, which also infuses the following traditional piece. After this, we'll hear the proud song Long Live the Jonga, an old African melody which has survived in Brazil. We start with a salute to the memory of the victims of the slave trade by the Mali singer Cassie Madi Djabate. Mogamonigara,